This is cassette one, side A, of Morden, A Russian Cat in Parry House, by Morden, via Alexandra Skobelev. It is a recording of the Hearer Book Service, publishers of books for people who are unable to read standard books. Synopsis. The author is the cat, but assisting him is his mum, an Arab lady of 87, widow of a Russian doctor, and living in a retirement home since 1971 with her beloved cat. Morden was 17 when he wrote this book, an absolute delight. Morden was first published by Access Press in Northbridge, Western Australia, in 1995. This, the original edition, has been recorded with the kind permission of the publisher, who have granted this reproduction without a fee for the sole use of people with print disabilities. It is read for you by Margaret Long of Alsonville, New South Wales, and is monitored by Molly Jones of Ulverston, Tasmania, in 1999. This work is copyright, and permission to copy for the sole use of people with a print disability has been given by the copyright owner. No unauthorised broadcasting, public performance or copying is permitted. All rights reserved. Copyright. Alexandra Skobelev, 1995. ISBN print text 08-644-50877. ISBN audio edition 1-864-72-428-5. This recording is of 1.5 hours playing time on one cassette. Alexandra Skobelev was born in Nazareth of Arab parentage and adopted at the age of 2 by a Russian missionary. She was raised and educated in Damascus, Syria, and Beirut, Lebanon. She speaks a number of languages and gained diplomas in piano and violin from the American University Conservatory in Beirut. After teaching music for 7 years in Damascus, she and her adoptive mother moved to Beirut, where she met and married her Russian husband. They had a son and a daughter, and Alexandra worked in the American hospital in Beirut for 4 years. In 1951, she was offered a position as medical assistant and interpreter to a Russian woman doctor who had been employed by King Ahmed I of Yemen, primarily to look after his wives, but also to conduct a clinic in the township. After some months, Alexandra was requested to move to the palace at Salar to become private nurse and companion to one of the king's wives, a young girl born in England and of an English mother and a Yemeni father. Then only 18, she had been married for 4 years and was desperately homesick for England. She formed a deep attachment for Alexandra, who still has in her possession touchingly childish handwritten letters from the young queen, written after Alexandra left when her contract expired. She rejoined her husband and children in Kuwait, where he had gone ahead to find a house and take up a position. He worked there as a draftsman and she as a nurse for 9 years. In 1961, they migrated to Australia. In 1971, Alexandra and her husband moved into one of the cottages at Parry House, a retirement village set among the beautiful bushland of Kalamunda, a hill suburb east of Perth. He died in 1976. I, her beloved cat Morden, came to live with her a year later. We were together for 17 years. On the facing page, there's a photo of Morden with the caption, "The author as a young cat," and Morden standing there with his eyes open, his ears up, a lovely little white bib, looking out, All the photos in this book are in black and white. Page 1, Preface. I am a cat, and my name is Morden. Now I have become a very old cat, almost 17. I lost my teeth on the right side, became very thin. My tail is thin and hairless. I feel I am going, slowly but surely going. For some time now I sleep in the bush, in spite of Mum's insistence to come home. "Come on, darling, your chair is waiting for you," she would gently say, standing in front of our tree. But I wouldn't budge or move from my place across the street from our flat, because I didn't want to disturb her. I feel cold even during the day, and to warm myself, I sleep in the middle of the street, and feel good under the hot sun. But the drivers of the passing cars didn't like it at all. They would stop, and taking me in their hands would give me to Mum if she would be on our veranda. Otherwise, they would shoo me off to the bush, and I would growl at them. What manners! But if Mum saw me there, she would shout at me, "Come here this minute, you'll be run over, silly cat." I only go to her when I feel it is time for my food. Now I cannot even jump up on a table to eat as I did before, but jump on a small chair which is a rest for Mum's feet. She understands and gives me my bowl there, caressing me while I eat, sometimes pushing food into my mouth with a special fork to help me chew, and I liked that. On the previous page, there was a photo of Morden with his bowl of food and Mum with the fork in it, with the caption, "Mum would feed me in my old age." Once in the morning, coming for my food, I sat in front of her and said, "Meow, meow," looking straight into her eyes. They told me plenty, those sad eyes, that she knows I am going forever, and that she was very sorry to lose me. But I'm going to lose her too. Poor Mum. But before this will happen, I want to tell you about this beautiful place called by Mum, Parry House. Page 3. A Russian Cat in Parry House. Correction. I am not a Russian cat, and I was not born in Russia. Neither was my real mother. She was born in Australia and was a pure tabby, and I'm like her, an Aussie tabby too. I'm a very beautiful tabby, I assure you, because since I was but a little kitten, everyone said I was a beautiful cat. My name is Morden. But let me go back and start from the beginning, why and when I acquired the unbelievable sobriquet Russian Cat. As much as I remember, it was like this. One day, a lady came to the house where I was born. The mistress of the house took me from my mother where I was asleep and showed me to the guest. I found myself sitting in her palm, head, body and all, the eyes of the guest looking at me. I was shivering from cold and trembling with fear lest I fall from that height. I started meowing as loud as I could, wishing to be put back with my mother. I looked up at the face looking down at me with a gentle smile and talking to me in a strange dialect, which I had never heard before, but to which I became used in my later years. The mistress of the house asked her what was the language she was talking in, and she said Russian. This new lady lifted me near to her face, and I could see her better. She had white hair and quite a different complexion from the one who used to feed my mother. Suddenly, to my disgust, the mistress asked this disturbing intruder, "Would you like to have this beauty, Alex?" The answer was, Oh, yes, please. So, on the spot, I was promised to her after I was weaned from my mother, because she had to undergo an operation, whatever that was. So, when I reached 1 month, the mistress took me from my mother, caressed me all over, and put me in a box with a thick rug in it, and off we went. I was whinging and fretting because I was thrown from one side to another of the box and could not sit still on my paws. Finally, I went to sleep and was awakened by the same voice I heard before. It was her again, the Russian lady with the white hair. She screamed in surprise at seeing me so grown up in such a short time. She never stopped talking to me in that strange language. I didn't understand a word of it, but according to her mellow and gentle voice, it had to be something very nice, and in future I used to recognise it even from afar and would run to meet her wherever she happened to be. On the spot, I was given a name, Morden. There and then my new life began. There's a photo on this page with the caption, "My sister, my mother and me," and they're in a basket with a nice rug in it, and the mother sitting there in Morden as a very little kitten is just looking over the side of the basket. As a kitten, I cared less about the place, my new home, except for milk, which I had to learn to lap from a bowl. This was so different from my mother's teat I missed so much. Every time I finished my milk, there in the bottom of the bowl was the head of a cat looking at me, and I wondered how come he never disappeared, as if always waiting for me to finish my milk. Sometimes, when I was in despair, I would grab the piece of cloth put on my chair where I slept and would suck it and knead the rest of it with my hind legs. I would purr away in perfect bliss thinking of my mother. I used to do this even at my older age, and my new mum would always say, "My poor little kitten," in Russian, of course, which is "my bedny kotik," and my mum's guest would laugh and say, "What poor kitten, he's fatter than you." My foster mother, Mum, called Alex by everyone else, was old, fat, neither pretty nor ugly, but all heart for me. She used to take me high near to her face and caress me with her chin. At the beginning, I was afraid of the height, but experienced it every day, I came to like it and stopped fighting as I had before. Once, when I was very near her face, I grabbed the end of her chin and started sucking it, because it was too good an opportunity to miss, but had to stop because my hind legs couldn't find anything to knead upon. Mum laughed and said, "My poor darling, you are still missing your mother." She knew what I was going through. She was all heart, my new mum. I was taught by Mum to do my small and big jobs in a special room called the bathroom, where Mum would go from time to time and close the door after her. Very soon after I was adopted, Mum took me to that room and put me in the middle of a red box containing white and grey pebbles. I understood right away what she wanted from me and did what I had to do. After I finished, I was very careful to leave the place clean, passing the pebbles under my body, trying to keep them inside the box, turning round and around. Mum was laughing during my gambols and said how smart I was. Later, every time I finished my food, Mum would take me to the red box and wait for me to finish and always laugh. With time, I knew where to go when duty called, and Mum would always caress me and say, "How smart you are, Morden." I was growing up and learning very fast under Mum's vigilant eye. One day, when Mum saw me running to that room, she picked me up and took me out the kitchen door, put me on the lawn and said, "You are now old enough to find your own place for your jobs. Go on then." And I did. The red box? Once I sneaked after Mum into that room, not for anything, but to explore and look at the box. It was not there anymore. Neither was it outside. It had disappeared completely. So from that time on, I would scratch the kitchen door when duty called to show Mum how smart I was. We had a small veranda in front of our house, where Mum would take me and, sitting there on her yellow chair, would watch me playing around. There are two photos on these pages, one with the caption "In front of our lemon tree" and Morden sitting on the grass under the lemon tree. The other is the rose bush, Mum and me in the background on her front veranda, and Mum sitting on the chair and Morden's on another chair next to her with the rose bush in front. There were roses on the left and two trees on a green lawn on the right, and I liked to play with dried twigs or leaves with my paws, to run about a bit and then to sleep under the tree. Once, when outside with Mum, I ran to the rose bush to do my job and was prickled by I don't know what. I screamed from pain and ran to Mum, who said to me, "Nelsia," which means forbidden. "That will teach you, my boy." She gave me a little tick on my nose with her finger, and every time I misbehaved, that finger would swing in front of my face. Oh, how much I disliked that finger. And who would not, I ask you? After that try under the rose bush, I never even tried to go near it again, no matter what. In the evenings, inside the house, I always had something to play with. A white ball thrown at me by Mum or by her guest, or a piece of red cloth on a string, which Mum would swing in front of my face and I would jump high and low to catch it. I was exhausted after all these frolics and would drop off to sleep wherever I happened to be. There are two photos of Morden on these pages. One is just of Morden's head with his mouth open and his ears up, eyes open wide, with the caption, "Talking to Mum." And the other one is Morden sitting on the grass, enjoying the sunshine. Page 12, Mum's Neighbours. When I reached 2 months, Mum said to me that it was just the time to see a vet, whoever that was. So the next morning she took me in her hands, went out of the house, closed the door, and walked along our small path to a big green room, which she called her car. She went inside with me and sat herself down behind a big ring and put me beside her, and off we went, roaring like mad along the streets. She stopped at last at a certain place, alighted, and with me in her hands went inside a house. There was a big room with 3 ladies sitting there. 2 of them had cats on their laps. I knew cats already, but the creature in front of the 3rd lady was unknown to me, and I started growling at him. Mum said, "It's a dog. Don't be afraid of him and stop being rude." Then a door opened and a man came in and invited us inside. Mum put me on a long table and talked to the man for a little while. There was a girl standing beside the man. She gave him something and he pricked my behind with it. I growled at him, but he was not at all afraid of me and only laughed and said to Mum, "Bring Morden in 2 months' time and I will fix him." What is fix him? I knew in some way that it was not nice, believe me. I slept all the way back home. On the previous page, there is a photo with the caption, a big green room, which she called her car. And it's a VW combi van with trees along the side of the road. As I grew older, I started to recognise people around me, especially our neighbours like Mrs. Goldsmith on our left and Mrs. Stewart on our right. Mrs. Stewart had a cat, a beautiful Persian cat, big and fluffy, especially the tail, with which I liked to play. The first time he saw me, he growled at me. But later, when he understood I was but a little kitten in spite of my size, he became very gentle with me and let me play with his tail and even let me enter his flat. His mum liked me too. I was free to explore her place and go anywhere I wanted, play with Daddy and even sleep. We became fast friends, sitting on the steps of his house or playing on the lawn in front of the steps, looking at the passers-by. He was my beloved friend until he disappeared. The only thing which puzzled me was that his mum and mine were not friends and seldom, if ever, talked to each other. Both of us couldn't understand what was going on between them. But later, much later, because of an incident, they became friends. I'll tell you all about it in due time. The lady who lived on our left, Mrs. Goldsmith, didn't have cats. But she liked me, and every time she passed our place, she would stop, caress me and say, "You are a beautiful cat, and a big one too." Her legs were so thin and tall, but I liked to rub myself on them. Once she came to us and had a cup of tea with Mum and said to her, "Isn't he a beauty, Alex? What's his name?" "Morden," Mum said. "What is Morden?" "In Russian it is ugly face," Mum answered. "Ugly face? Really, Alex? Why not tiger or puss or pussy? He is so much like a tiger." "You are right. But it is more fun to call him Morden." It was not fun for me. How could I have an ugly face when everyone said I was beautiful? Until now, people do not know how to pronounce my name properly and suggest other names, as if my name was a competition with a prize for the best name. One day, I didn't see Mrs. Goldsmith around and searched for her everywhere, but couldn't find her. She disappeared. Her place was taken by Mrs. Bale, a very nice lady, whom I seldom saw outside her flat, but when she did, she would walk with difficulty, leaning on a curved stick. She too would stop and always say, "You are a beautiful tabby." Unfortunately, she didn't like me to get inside her place. Once, when Mum saw me entering her open door, she came running after me, dragged me out and said, "Nelsia." In Russian it means forbidden. "Don't you dare do this again." But I did it several times, only when Mum was not around. Mrs. Bale would shoo me off, and I would scram very quickly, lest Mum would see me disobeying her orders. Mum's first friend was Topsy. She lived a little far from us and had a cat named Puss. He was very big, older than I, but almost the same size. He was grey with big eyes and very noisy. I was always behind Mum when we went to see Miss Topsy. I was not permitted to get inside Topsy's house because she said cat smelled, but outside it was different. I saw several plates outside her window where Puss ate, and he probably slept in the bush. When we would go for a walk with Mum, I walked behind her, and when we would be near Topsy's flat, Mum would take me in her arms, seeing Puss following us and growling at me. When Mum would put me on a big rock behind our kitchen and say, "Sitty toot," meaning "sit here," I knew she was going to have a cup of tea with Topsy in her flat. There's a photo on the facing page with the caption, "Sitty toot, the rock outside our kitchen door." And there's a big rock in the middle of a bushy sort of a garden. There's a tree and a grass tree and other smaller rocks. Mum's family came to see her one day, and I was introduced to all of them, starting from her daughter Helen. She was very beautiful, with brown hair and lovely gentle eyes. Helen's daughter Michelle was also a very beautiful girl, tall, with a red nose. Apparently she had an allergy to cats. She never touched me with her hands and all the time looked at me at a distance. Helen's husband was indifferent to me and said only at Helen's remark, "Isn't he big for his age?" "He's big all right. It's not a cat, but a horse." And everyone laughed. "What is a horse anyway?" "His mother was also a very big cat," said Mum, and showed them a photo of me and my mother. Mum's son Nicky with his two boys were there too. They all liked me. The boys played with me inside and then took me out because Michelle was sneezing and blowing her nose all the time. When outside, the boys put me on the lawn and I started to climb up our tree and jump down. They laughed and said, "Here's a show-off," whatever it was. I went to sleep after they left. I was exhausted. I was always behind Mum when she walked around our place. On our first stroll, Mum took me to her new friend, Miss Q. She too had a cat by the name of Tina. There's a photo on the facing page with the caption, "Tina and her mum." And Tina's mum, Miss Q, is holding Tina up on her shoulder. And Miss Q is wearing a cardigan with a skirt, and she's got curly hair and glasses. On the next pages, there's another photo of Morden with the caption, "Admiring the garden," and Morden's just sitting on the corner of the garden looking. When we arrived at the door of her flat, her cat came to greet us with a very gentle meow. But when she saw me behind Mum, she growled at me like all the others. Seeing that I was only a kitten in spite of my size, she left me and went to Mum with her gentle meows, and I liked her. I liked Miss Q. She was very gentle with me, caressing me, but we didn't get inside her flat this time. Mum wanted to show me everything. She said goodbye, and we left. While walking behind Mum, I was thinking of Tina. She was so beautiful with white, red and brown patches over her body and brown eyes in a small, gentle face. She was petite in comparison with me, although she looked older than I was. As we appeared before the corner of the street, we saw a lady sitting on her veranda. She greeted Mum. Then, when she saw me behind her, she screamed, "Oh, what a beautiful cat! Come in, I want to look at him." So we climbed a few steps and entered a big room. I started to explore as usual, even entered another room. Mum shouted at me, "Behave yourself and sit still." But the lady said, "Leave him alone, Alex. Let him do what he wants." And then to me, "Come here, darling. Let me look at you. You are beautiful." So, seeing a small table facing the window, I jumped up and looked outside. Mrs. K, seeing me so relaxed, said to Mum, "You see, Alex, the cats own the place, and us. We never own them." "What is his name?" "Morden," said Mum. "What is Morden? Why not Tiger? He is so much like one." Here we go again, I thought. I visited this gentle lady plenty of times when Mum was away, leaving me sad and lonely. I would scratch her door and she would welcome me and let me in and do as much as I liked. She would feed me and cuddle me, and I would be on her table where I would sleep or look at the passers-by. And when Mum and her car would be back, she would open the kitchen door and let me out, not before telling me to come again. And there's a photo here of Morden, looking as though he's just coming out the kitchen door. Page 23, Visiting the Vet. One morning after our breakfast, Mum said to me, "Today you are 4 months old, so I will take you to the vet." "The vet? That horrible man again," I growled. We went to the car and off to the streets and stopped at that place. Inside were ladies with their dogs and cats. The door opened and the vet invited us inside. He took me in his arms and said that he will bring me back in 2 days. He caressed me and said, "You feed him very well. Look at him. He has become such a big and beautiful cat." Before leaving, Mum spoke to me. "Don't worry, my darling. Everything will be all right." She cuddled me all over and pressed me to her chest, as if not willing to let go of me. I saw tears in her eyes, which I never saw before, and I wondered what is going to happen to me. At last, she put me on the table and waved goodbye to the vet. The door closed after her, and my heart sank down in my breast. After Mum left, the vet pricked my behind and I fell asleep. When I came to, I felt an awful pain under my tail, which was upright outside the cage and I couldn't get it inside, nor could I pass through the bars. So the girl opened the cage and put me in a basket with a soft rug in it. She pricked me again and I went to sleep. So that was called Fix It. I wished I could fix them too. The next morning, the pain was a little less, but my tail was still sticking out of the bars like a chimney. They both looked after me, giving me milk and meat, but I couldn't eat properly and meowed sadly from time to time. At last, the girl took me home and gave me to Mum. She hovered around me and put me on my chair and caressed me all over, saying, "My poor Kotick, what have they done to you, my darling?" I recovered completely in a few days and we started going around the place as if nothing had happened. I felt stronger and more sure of myself. Everything was the same, except for the big, fat cat, Fatso. He suddenly came from nowhere and belonged to nobody. Later, another cat appeared from nowhere. He was Ginger, called so by everyone, and was reddished all over. There's a photo of Ginger up a tree at night, and the caption just says, Ginger. These two cats used to annoy me in the days to come, especially Fatso, because after being adopted, both of them, by Mrs. D, they thought of themselves as kings of the place. They didn't like me from the start and always sniffed and growled at me wherever I was. But when Mum was around, they would pass me by, looking askance at Mum, but swearing at me under their breath all the same. Mum started to spray them with water from our tap. They would know and would scram in a jiffy, and Mum would laugh and laugh. After I was fixed, you know, I started to put on weight and became a very fat cat. Maybe as fat as Fatso, but still I was afraid of him. Once, when Mum was not near, he came slowly towards me, stood there on his four legs in an athletic position, looked down at me and said, "Don't be proud of yourself. You are neither a tomcat nor a she-cat. I am a real cat, a superior cat." I didn't understand a word he said and felt dejected, humiliated and sorry for myself. My head went to the side and my tail in between my hind legs. All my body shrank while I looked up at him in terror. He was so close to my nose that I could easily have given him a slap on his face, but I was a coward. Every time when Mum was not outside, he would always stand over me, put his head down and sing to me the same song. "You bug, you should be pushed out of here. This place is mine." The cheek. On the facing page, there's a photo with the caption, "Ginger and his mum, Mrs. D." And Mrs. D is holding Ginger up on her shoulder. She's wearing a long jumper and slacks, and she's got white curly hair, and she wears glasses too. Mum was sorry for me. As she said several times, "You are a coward and stupid. Don't you see? They are all envious of your beauty and size. Be proud of yourself and beat them all. You are strong and fit. Show them what you are. Try at least." How could I compare these two with Debbie? We were friends and loved each other, and both of us were pampered by our mums. But one day, I couldn't see him for a while, not even in his house. Seeing me searching for him in all the rooms, his mum said to me, "Dabby has gone, and you'll never see him again. My poor Dabby." And she cried. Mum too missed Dabby and asked his mum about him. She said that he had to be put down as she had to enter the hospital. I didn't understand a word they said and continued to search for him during the day and think of him all the time. But he disappeared. I would never forget him because Mum, when opening the door for me in the mornings, would always say, "Remember Dabby? Go and play with him." There was another lady by the name of Anna. I'll tell you about that incident I mentioned before. This happened after Dabby disappeared. As I said before, Mum and Mrs. Stewart were not friends. But Mum was not against my visiting her. The only thing this lady didn't like about me was scratching her garden for my jobs. Mum didn't like it either and told her to spray a little water on me to shoo me off. She never did that until she saw me very busy at my job. One day, she took the hose and sprayed a little water on me. I ran from there to Mum, who was looking at her behind our rose bush. At that very moment, when Mrs. Stewart was spraying me, Anna was passing along our street and saw this happen. She ran to our neighbour, snatched the hose out of her hands, and started spraying her in fury. With much difficulty, Mrs. Stewart took the hose out of Anna's hands and watered her from top to bottom. The hose changed hands several times until Anna, wet all over, went running down the street. When she stopped a little and, waving her fist towards Mrs. Stewart, shouted, "You deserve to be poisoned." Mum and I were standing in the corner of our veranda, Mum laughing her head off with her hand on her mouth. We went quickly inside our house, Mum still laughing, and closed the door. The very next morning there was a knock at our door, and when Mum opened it, there was Mrs. Stewart smiling at Mum, who looked at her with bewilderment. "I came to apologise for what I did to Anna yesterday." "But you saw it for yourself," said our neighbour. "She started it. She asked for trouble, didn't she?" "Why apologise to me and not to Anna?" Mum said, and added, "Come in and have a cup of tea with me." "I cannot stay. I am waiting for a call. But thanks all the same." Since that day they became friends, having cups of tea or chatting at the doors. Funny, isn't it? Once, sitting at our kitchen door, I saw Fatso coming. But knowing Mum was inside behind the open door, I didn't move, just watched him nearing me. He stood in front of our big tree, got up on his hind paws, and started scratching the trunk furiously with his front paws for a while. Then he went down and looked at me ironically, as if to say, "Now, can you do the same? Go on, do it," and left. But didn't go far. He sat down and was watching me. I went to the tree, stood up, and scratched my paws on the trunk. I felt good, as if my claws were washed and clean. I did it several times, but Mum forbade me to do it, saying I was damaging the tree. What nonsense! This is the end of Side A of Cassette 1 of Morden, by Morden via Alexandra Skobelev. Would you please turn the cassette over now to hear Side B? This is Side B of Cassette 1 of Morden by Morden via Alexandra Skobelev. Tina came to our lawn once or twice. We puffed at each other and then she ran away. In spite of the fact Ginger was adopted and was fed by his mum, he used to come to our veranda and eat what was left on my bowl at night. So Mum would stay there until I finished and would take the bowl inside with her, and me too. There was another cat around for some time before. He was white, very beautiful, fluffy and fat. There's a photo of a very perfectly white cat on this page with the caption, "The White Cat." He used to meow at night, but his meows were not the same as other cats. He meowed as if calling for somebody. They were doleful and sad meows, and I didn't like them. He would sit on a small wall behind our bushes and meow and meow. And this was always at night. He hated me and beat me in spite of my slaps on his face and would eat all that I would leave on my plate. We had real battles between us, growling and swearing at one another, and entwined would roll on the lawn. The neighbours didn't like to be awakened during the night by our concert. Neither did Mum. She would come out of the door and spray us from the hose. This hose was always ready at night to spray the intruder. I don't know what became of him after I left. Mrs. Stewart and Mrs. Bale went to our hospital, and Mum took me there once or twice to look at them, and they would put me on their beds by turn and caress and cuddled me. I liked that and purred away under their fingers. They both soon disappeared, but I didn't mind. I didn't miss them much. Only my friend Dabby. Page 33, Travelling by Car. I knew already about our car, so big and high, but when the door was left opened by Mum, I would quickly jump in and go to sleep on Mum's bed there. I couldn't jump on the front, but when Mum had visitors, I would jump up in front of the big glass of their cars, sit there and look at the passers-by, or just go to sleep. Mum forbade me to sit on their cars because I would leave dirty paw marks, but I still did it. We had plenty of cars in front of our hospital, but I liked matrons the most, and I liked her too, so tall and elegant. I would sit on her car and look at people entering or getting out of the door, and of course I sat there to go to sleep. During the wet season, I would leave dirty marks on her car, and she would shoo me off from there, giving me a small tap on my behind and say, "I'll tell your mum on you, just you wait." And sometimes she would come near the car and caress me gently and say, "All right, you can stay here, you naughty boy." I liked also to sit under the cars and watch for Mum's feet. On this page, there's a photo of Morden crossing the car park towards the cars, with the caption, "Looking for a car to sun myself on." I knew about cars since I was a little kitten, when Mum took me to Wagon, where Mum's daughter, Helen, lived with her family. Helen invited Mum to go there when I was older. So one day Mum said to me, "Tomorrow we are going to see Helen. Remember Helen?" All that day Mum was hovering in the kitchen, cooking, and then went inside her room. She opened a suitcase and a bag and started to put in dresses and other things, talking to herself and whistling. She always talked to herself in Russian. I couldn't understand a word of it, and what all this fuss was, of course. But sitting at the door, I watched her. The next day, very early after our breakfast, together with the suitcase, the big bag and me, she went to the car. She sat at her place, putting me beside her, and off we went, roaring along our street. As I was very young and scared, I jumped on Mum's shoulder, but she took me from there and held me in her left hand while driving with the other hand. Then, when I dropped off to sleep, she put me beside her and I slept all the way. I was hungry and thirsty when we arrived. We were greeted by Helen, her husband, and her daughter Michelle, the one who sneezed so much in our house. Helen left me outside to play with her cat Cheeky, a very old grey cat who puffed at me. Later on, finding out that I was only a kitten, she became kinder and even played with me. All the 3 days of our stay there, I was kept away from Michelle owing to her allergic disposition. During the night, I slept in the lounge, and during the day played, and the food was good. Mum, with all of them, came outside and watched us. So, as long as Mum was there, I was happy. But this was a long time ago. Mum started to take me with her to the market. Before going, she would jingle with her keys so I would know we were going. When the keys jingled, I sprang from my bed and followed Mum outside. Into the car we went. I sat at Mum's left and started to follow the road. At the market, she ordered me to sit on the dashboard, locked the car and left. From there, I could see people going and coming. I liked when some of the passers-by stopped at my window and said, "Look, look, there is a big cat there, and what a beautiful cat." Once I noticed that there on Mum's right was a small basket. So when I jumped to take my position, instead of taking the lift, I remained at Mum's right side, put my hind legs on the basket and my front legs on the wheel in front of Mum. She didn't like it and said I was obstructing her view of the road and gave me a small kick on my behind. But I didn't move much until she shouted at me, "Enough is enough. Get down and stay there." But I did it every time we went to the market. While driving along the street one day, we had to stop a little. One of the passers-by on Mum's right side, seeing me in this funny position, shouted to the others, "Come and look, the cat is driving the car." They all came closer and laughed. Mum was mad at me and said, "You see what a stupid position you are putting me in? They cannot see me because of you, silly cat. You are making a fool of me. Get down and stay down." She was really mad at me. But after that, she allowed me to drive because she liked the attention of the passers-by. And I was glad. Meanwhile, a new lady, Mrs. J, came to live on our right. She was plump and nice, but she didn't like me to sit on her chair at night or to dig in her garden for my jobs. She would shoo me off, and Mum would run after me. Mum told her to spray me with her hose, but she never did, preferring just to shoo me off. Page 39, Staying with Mum's Friends. There's a photo on the facing page, taken from above looking down at Morden's head, with the caption, "Self-Portrait." My routine of living was always the same. Milk with biscuits, called whiskettes or go-cat, and a bowl of water. But I liked to eat with Mum when she had her breakfast, and she would oblige me with pieces of bread and Vegemite and a bit of cheese. I knew it was good for me and asked for more, standing in front of her and saying a small meow. At dinner time, instead of pieces of meat from that box, Mum would have a machine in her hand and a can in her left. She would turn and turn the can, and there would be a little click, and the can would be open, and Mum would put the stuff on my plate. I knew that click very well, and would go straight to my plate and eat. But sometimes I didn't like my meal, so I would turn round and go to the door. Mum would say in an angry voice, "You bloody cat." She didn't know how to swear in Russian. "People are dying from hunger and you turn your nose up. You deserve to starve." But I never starved, believe me, because Mum would give me something else to eat. I like to eat with Mum at tea time too. So after I finished my food in the kitchen, I would go to join her to enjoy her food too. And sitting just in front of her and looking at her hand going up to her mouth, I would remind her of my presence with a little tap of my paw on her knee. I ate everything she gave me, be it carrots or green stuff or a piece of bread with a bit of sauce on it, just anything. But if Mum would put all this on my plate, I wouldn't eat it because I like to eat with her, and that's that. Mum always admired me when I washed, especially in the mornings. I would start with my face, after watering my paw with my saliva, then behind my ears, my feet, my paws, my tail, and all over my back, as much as I could reach. And it was always after my meals, too. Mum said once that if people washed themselves as cats do, they would never need any shower. Something else Mum admired in me, it is to be punctual for my meals. Are people late for their meals? Mum used to go in her car, I don't know where, and leave me alone. I had to be fed by her friends, our next-door neighbours. In the start, it was always Miss Q. At the exact time, she would come to our kitchen door, open it, and calling me gently, get into the house, open the big box, and put food on my plate. She called me not by my name, but Pussy. As with all of them, she didn't know how to pronounce my name. Then, after caressing me, she would go home. Miss Q always had a kind word for me and a gentle tap on my back. Later on, whenever I saw her walking in our street, I would run to her and rub myself against her feet. And now, when I am sick and lie down in the middle of the street, passing me by, she always warns me against the cars. "Go home," she says. "You'll be run over." When I was a very little kitten, Mum would give me to a very gentle lady by the name of Julie. She liked cats so much so that she had them not only in her house but in the garden where they were in cages. I was never in a cage but inside her house, treated like a persona grata, sleeping in her bedroom and eating in her kitchen. She would greet us at our car, take me in her hands and always say to Mum, "Don't worry, Alex, I'll take good care of him." And she did. After my breakfast, she would take me to the garden for my jobs, and while I was busy, she would go and feed her other cats in the cages. Later, I would run to her and look at those cats, who didn't seem to be happy. Then, she would take me in her hands and home. There was a very cheeky black cat in the garden. He would spring from nowhere and onto Julie's shoulders and scare me to death. But not Julie. She would calmly put him down and take me in the house. Her children liked me too and played with me. But the other cats in the house didn't like me because they were jealous of me. They beat and growled at me, although I was the youngest of them all. In spite of the nice time I spent in Julie's house, I still missed Mum and was glad to see her car at the gate. There's a photo on this page of Morden sitting down looking up with the caption, "Waiting for Mum's car." Mum had another friend called Les, and she had me three times while Mum was away. Les and her children looked after me and played with me, but I still missed Mum. The last time I was with them, I missed her so much that in the evening, seeing the door to the garden open, I took to my heels and ran out down the steps to the garden and into the street. Sniffing the ground, I found the way to our house. I scratched the kitchen door and meowed until Mum opened it. She couldn't believe her eyes when she saw me. "How did you come to be here? Where is Les?" she screamed and went searching for Les in the dark. "How did you find the way? Tell me, she asked. How could I explain to her that our whiskers can detect any odour, any particular odour of streets, houses, people, and that our eyes are very sharp and can see things at a long distance and in the dark? In a few moments, Les came running to our flat, and when she saw me, she gave me a piece of her mind, and it was a very good piece too. She had a cup of coffee with Mum and left, still angry with me, saying, 'Don't you ever dare do it again, silly cat.' Tina passed our kitchen door several times and once came very near to me as I was sitting there and gave me a small slap on my face and ran away. But I was not angry at her. How could one be angry with those eyes? There's a photo on this page of Morden with the caption, 'Our whiskers tell us everything.' And it's a very unusual photo. The whiskers look very mysterious. It's though it's been a negative and superimposed. They look very special. Page 45, Our Daily Life. Most of all, I liked my chair in the house. But Mum didn't give me much peace. She liked to search for my fleas. Gently she would raise my face and with her fingers scratch and scratch my neck to frighten the fleas away. And then, when she found one, she would squeeze it between her two fingers and say, 'That will teach you to bite, Morden.' I liked the scratching and would purr away during this procedure. Strangely enough, the fleas didn't bother Mum, but liked her daughter's legs, and every time she would be in our house, she always would find one or two fleas on her legs, then start scratching and scratching and say to Mum, 'Please spray the place before I come, will you?' And Mum did. Mum had a small brush with which she would brush me, especially in the mornings before breakfast and at night before going to bed. Once she was washing my face with a wet cloth and inadvertently pull one whisker, and I winked at her. 'How did you do that?' she screamed and laughed. She did it again and again, and I would wink at her every time. But in the end I was fed up, and while she pulled one of my whiskers, I bit her finger. She screamed from pain and said, 'Oh, sorry, darling, I didn't want to hurt you. I will never do it again.' But she did it once again to show her guest how funny I was, and both of them laughed. Very funny. Mum always laughed at my expense. Like the other day, feeling discomfort inside me, I stood high on my four paws, my tail straight up, and produced a strange loud noise which frightened me, so much that I jumped down from my chair and ran to the door, followed by Mum's laughter and a small remark, 'Don't be rude. Look who's talking.'" There's a photo on the opposite page of Morden with his back arched and his tail up. The caption, "A strange loud noise." Mum liked to just stand in front of my chair while I was asleep. I would feel her presence and start purring away, except when she ate garlic. I would jump down in disgust and run to the door. Oh, boy, did she smell. Why does she eat that junk? My fleas didn't like garlic either. Mum knew it and would rub my neck and under my face with ground garlic, and the fleas would run to my back and my legs. But Mum would follow them. How did she know where they were? And then would squeeze one or two of them. not giving any attention to my whinges and growls, trying to free myself from her. For some time after that, I would feel happy, with no scratching as before. Now when I am sick, the fleas have invaded all my body and nothing can restrain them from bothering me. They invaded not only me, but our flat too, and Mum would spray around the house with I do not know what, from which I would sneeze and run out in a jiffy. The thing which Mum liked most was to watch me when fed, contented and happy. I would lie on my back and scratch myself with my hind paw for 1 or 2 minutes and then go to sleep under the tree. Mum knew then that I was happy, so she too was happy, and she would always say, "My darling and precious cat, I am glad you are happy." The only thing we couldn't share without a battle was that yellow bamboo chair on the veranda. When Mum was not near, I would jump very quickly on it and go to sleep. Mum would come from nowhere and shoo me off it, but I wouldn't move until Mum gave me a tap on my behind. Then only I would jump down, swearing and growling at her in my deep voice. Then only could she sit on it, and offended, I would go to the bush. There are 3 photos on these pages, and the first one is of a young man squatting on the ground on the footpath in front of a car. He has a video recorder in one hand and he's patting Morden with the other. And the caption is, "Mum's grandson, Dr. Igor Trebizian, making a film of me." Then there's a photo of Morden sitting on the yellow chair, looking very defiant, with the caption, "Refusing to budge from the yellow chair." And the next photo is again of the yellow chair, Morden sitting on a cushion on it and Mum sitting next to him. And the caption is, "On our front veranda, Mum and me arguing about the yellow chair." I liked going around our place with Mum, sniffing and exploring the small gardens in front of the flats, and sometimes even leaving Mum to continue her walk alone. But she would whistle and whistle, and I would run to her as quickly as I could, and the passers-by would admire me for this and say, "Here is Alex's dog." But most of all, I liked to sit on Mum's arms. With my front paws on her shoulder, I was proud to look at everyone, showing them I was protected and loved. When I started being weak, I stopped going round with Mum, sitting instead at the hospital door or at the end of our veranda. When she appeared, I would run to her and rub my feet against hers, and together we would go home side by side, the end of my tail in Mum's hand. I was always waiting for Mum's car, and the moment she got down, I would go to her and say, "Meow, meow, where have you been and why are you late?" And she would understand and would take me in her hands and go home. All the way to our door, she always would say, "You are my friend, my golden one, my dog." "What dog? How can I be a dog when I am a cat?" She is funny, my Mum, but I loved her as much as she loved me. Mum is beaut, but funny sometimes. I could never tell in what mood she would be in the mornings. Very gloomy, grouchy, and very nasty to me, pushing me out of the house, puffing and puffing from pain in her back, or full of life and cuddles for me. She would turn round and round with me in her hands and then stop sometimes in front of that picture box and say to me, "Look, look, there is a big cat there." It was a big cat, all right. I puffed at that creature and jumped down. Mum said, "It is a lion, and he is not going to eat you, you silly cat." How do I know? My heart started beating and I was shivering. But Mum, she was laughing her head off. Once after our breakfast, we went to relax for a while. Mum on her bed and me on my chair. During my sleep, my nose and whiskers started to turn round, and I sniffed a strange smell. I woke up in a jiffy. The kitchen door was open, and that smell came from there. I jumped down and stood in front of Mum's bed and gently meowed to her. She woke up and, looking at me, said, "Now what do you want?" In a second, she was on her feet screaming, "Oh, my God, my stew is burning!" and ran to the kitchen, me at her heels. The kitchen was full of steam, smoke, and that odour. She put off the gas and threw the pan into the sink and turned the water from the tap on it. Turning to me, she took me in her hands and said, "My darling Kotick, you saved my life, do you know? Without you, we would all be on fire. How did you know, my darling?" Poor Mum, she was trembling. She went inside and lit a cigarette to calm her nerves. Page 54, Catastrophe. One morning, Mum was preparing herself to sit outside. She prepared her chair, put the small round table at her right, and put a cup of coffee on it. I was already at her side to enjoy that beautiful sun. But the catastrophe struck Mum that sunny day. Instead of sitting on her chair, she fell over on the small pebbles, tripping over the hose, and started shouting her head off. I ran away to the end of our lawn in big fright, not knowing what to do. Our neighbours like Joe, Q and Bill, and those who were walking on our street, all came running to Mum and tried to get her up, but she couldn't and only shouted from pain. Then a huge car arrived and two men took Mum into it and left, producing a horrible wailing sound. Everyone left our place saying, "Poor, poor Alex." I never knew where Mum was taken, hoping only she wouldn't disappear as the rest of them had during these years. During her absence, I was fed in turn by Joan, Bill, and of course by Miss Q. They all were very gentle with me, caressing me and saying, "Don't worry, your mum will be all right, poor puss." They all knew and understood my distress when at night I was howling and moaning in my deep voice, feeling something awful has happened to her. And nobody was mad at me, especially Bill, who would invite me to his house, permit me to explore and even to sleep under his chair. He called me Put. And there's a photo of Morden asleep under the chair with the caption, "Sleeping." At last Mum was back. Helen, her daughter, was there hovering around her, making her comfortable. They said Mum had broken her leg and her back. Plenty of Mum's friends came to see her, but Mum was not the same. No more laughter and giggles because she had terrible pain. I knew it from her whinges, oohs and ahs, especially at night. She would cry and moan, but I didn't know how to comfort her, poor Mum. But with all the pain, she never forgot to feed me and obliged me by closing and opening the door for me. She started to walk with the rounded stick, as Mrs. Bale did. With time, she became much better, and everything went on as usual, except that she started to walk with a stick, big and shiny, which I hated, because she threatened me with it when I disobeyed. Now, instead of her finger, it was this stick swinging in front of my face. I would scram in a jiffy. But Mum wouldn't laugh as she did before. She was very nervous those days, but that was long ago. The same routine went on, and Mum was in a better mood. Once, when sitting on her chair and having her plate on her lap, suddenly the whole lot was on the floor in front of me as I was waiting for my share of our dinner. Mum was in distress. With oohs and ahs, she bent to pick up the pieces. But I was glad to help her. It was a real feast for me. I went gulping the pieces in front and behind me and lapping up all the sauce strewn around. At last I was full and satisfied and watched Mum going and coming to the kitchen with a cloth. I was washing myself in perfect bliss, and Mum thanked me for helping her, which made me very proud. So year went after year, and then I started to become what I am now, while Mum became fitter and fitter, still walking with that stick. The only thing which worried her was that I would not sleep inside, and that for many and many days. I simply didn't want to disturb her, and that is that. Page 59, Epilogue. My end has come at last. It is very clear in my mind. That morning, the last of my life, the vet came again. Seeing him coming out of his car, I went to hide behind our ivy, but the vet was very quick. He grabbed me by my mane and took me to Mum, who was sitting on her chair, my small chair under her feet. He said, "Good morning, Alex, so this is it," and put me on my chair. But Mum took me from there, hugged and pressed to her heart, with tears in her eyes, and said to me, "Morden, my beloved Kotick, my little friend, what am I going to do without you? But it is better this way than to suffer as you are." She was crying and weeping by now, with the vet looking down at us. Pressed to her bosom, I was thinking, is the vet going to fix me again? At last, Mum gave me to the vet, who put me in a cage, and off we went. At his house, he gently put me on the table and pricked my behind. I dropped to sleep, but this time my awakening was quite different from the previous ones. I saw myself in a bright light and free from pain. I was hovering over our house, and I saw Mum, still sitting on her chair and crying, with both hands over her face. She stood up at last and entered in and closed the door after her. And believe it or not, I followed her through the door. I understood that I could go through any ceiling or door or a wall. How could I do that? Then I floated up to the space and looked around. I saw cats and dogs and other creatures. There was Dabby sitting beside his mum. Fatso and Ginger without their mum. Tina was there too, but without her mum. Anna with her five cats too. But they seemed so happy and peaceful. I was not afraid of any of them. There was no animosity towards me or by me to them. I saw Mum plenty of times crying as she was looking at the portrait she made of me. I couldn't meow to her, hoping only she would come and join me one day, as I heard her say, "And when I die and peace obtain, you will appear to me again, and both of us will talk together, without a sign, without a word, converse at ease with one another, as easy as we did before." So we will sit there, side by side, high in the sky, and watch the world go by down under. On the front cover of this book, there is a painting of Morden by Alexandra Skobelev. And this is the portrait of Morden, and it's painted in colour. Morden has this lovely tabby with browns and blacks, brown eyes, white bib, two front legs are white, and all of his paws are white also. This is the end of Morden, A Russian Cat in Parry House, by Morden via Alexandra Skobelev, read by Margaret Long of Alstonville, New South Wales. All rights reserved. No part of this recording may be reproduced in any form nor be broadcast without the prior permission of the copyright holder or her agent. The book has been recorded by the Hearer Book Service, a voluntary community service based in Hobart and distributed to print handicapped people throughout Australasia. We are always pleased to receive any comments or criticisms which will assist our service. Please write care of 6 Letitia Street, North Hobart, Tasmania, 7000. If you would like to receive a cassette containing the latest additions to the Hearer Book catalogue, contact the Hearer Book Service, 6 Letitia Street, North Hobart, 7000, phone 03-6234-1101. Hearer Book also has magazines on cassette, available for individual subscription. You may order your personal copy from the Hearer Book Service, 6 Letitia Street, North Hobart, 7000, phone 03-6234-1101. The cassette will be mailed to you each month. It will be posted in a normal mailer with a Hearer Book embossed on one side. The front has a reversible address label. Please return the copy of the individual subscriptions as soon as possible to ensure prompt delivery of your next month's magazine. The annual subscription is for each magazine of 12 monthly cassettes. The magazine selections are Australian Woman's Weekly, Australian Women's Day, New Idea, Clio, Australian Playboy, House and Garden, Time, Reader's Digest, National Geographic, Australian Book Review, Motor, Bulletin and News Talk, and Australian Wellbeing. The quarterly magazines are Diabetes Conquest, Australian Geographic, and This England. Please allow this tape to run to the end for the convenience of the next reader.